Well, good morning, everyone. Good afternoon or good evening, depending on where you're joining. My name is Anar Sumar. I'm the moderator of this session. Our session is Modern IT, DevOps to ITIL. With me, I have Nathan Lisanowski, who's the speaker on this session. A quick background on myself, I'm also a System Center MVP in the cloud and data center space. With me, I have Nathan Lisanowski, who is also a five-time System Center and Cloud and Data Center MVP. It is an absolute pleasure to introduce Nathan Lisanowski for this particular session. Nathan, please take on the presentation.
Awesome. Thank you, Anar. And welcome to everybody from around the world. We're really looking forward to walking through Modern IT DevOps to ITIL. So just to set the tone of this session, this is both a IT-centric session as well as a dev-centric session. It's a business session as well as a technical session. So you're going to get a whole collection of different knowledge coming out of the content that we're going to be sharing with you today. We're going to be doing about 30 minutes of demo and about 30 minutes of walking through concepts. So at the end of this session, you should have both an understanding of how DevOps fits into ITIL. You should have an understanding of how you can transform your IT department. We'll walk through Microsoft technologies that map to those concepts. And then at the end of the session, we'll give you some really practical next steps that you can use to be able to implement some of these concepts that we talked about today within your organization. These will be easy types of things that you can do. They don't take the whole organization. They have a really nice opportunity to be able to make these changes within your business. So the first thing I'll convey to you is we're going to take a step back. We're going to take a step back and we're going to reimagine how we deliver IT. Because this is going to take a little bit of a change in a lot of the ways your business works. And particularly in the ways that your IT business works. What we're really going to be looking at is taking service improvement glasses and looking at our business in a different way. And we're going to hopefully take away some new ideas from this conversation. So I'm going to start with a little bit of a concept. For some businesses, the way IT is perceived within the business is as this black box. This may not be your organization. It may be a portion of your organization that sees you this way. But why does the business see IT as this black box? Why does the business sometimes see IT as a black box that money goes into, but they really don't know what's going on within it? What's happened over the last several years is IT has gone through this sort of inflection point where we used to kind of be able to get away with being that black box because IT was just scary enough that the business was okay throwing money at it, expecting that they were going to be able to get some kind of value out. But what's happened is the business is expecting more from IT. The business is expecting IT to better align to the business and to better execute within the business and become more transparent. So what we're going to talk about today within the context of ITIL and DevOps is how you become a service provider. What is a service provider? A service provider is an IT organization that delivers transparently to the business and enables the business with services that help it grow, help it serve its customers, help it sell more, help it improve internally. You have to think about IT as a service provider that delivers something to the business in a way the business understands it. You're not just delivering a network cable or a server anymore. You're delivering a customer ordering service. You're delivering a university website. You're delivering end-user computing services. You're delivering these services that the business consumes. And if you don't become transparent, they're going to go get them from somewhere else. So the opportunity that we have is to not only become transparent as IT professionals, but also to help our businesses more transparently, help our businesses improve. So when we look at becoming an IT service provider, that contains really five centric things we need to be thinking about. First is we have to have a strategy of business alignment. A strategy of business alignment enables us to think about IT in a different way. It enables us to think about IT as a business enabler to help them grow. It enables us to also think about how that strategy aligns to requirements. When the business is asking me for something, how do I enable those requirements by getting beyond the question? How do I think about this sales director is asking me for something that's going to help him improve his business. He's asking me about it within his microcosm. How do we expand that to be able to give him the real picture he's asking for? We provide consultation on the direction. Some of the organizations I work with have very significant infrastructures, for example. They're running very significant data centers, and the way in which they deliver those data centers is to deliver hardware to their customers. But what they're doing right now is they're transforming the way they deliver it to become less and less about the fact that they happen to execute those workloads, and more about consultation around where those workloads are procured from. They become almost a service bus to retrieve the appropriate resources for the organization, no matter where they are. They're responsible for technology acquisition, so going out and helping procure that technology. Everybody who's in IT right now has experience with the business going out and getting some piece of technology that doesn't totally align to what architecture intends long-term for the business. And the way that we solve for that is we become that consultative service provider for our customers. We also focus on continuous improvement. Continuous improvement means that we're engaging with the business to review what we're doing, see if we're getting the do and done, and then take that back around full circle to improve the service we're delivering to our customers. All right, so there's two concepts within IT that bring this to the table. I'm gonna walk through both of them. And the idea is sometimes that these sort of are in conflict with each other. In a way they are, but in a way they're not. So we're gonna talk about how these two concepts within your business really do align. So the first thing we're gonna talk about is ITIL. What is it? What is it here for? Why is it in existence? How does it relate? ITIL is a framework that's been around for a long time. It was invented in Britain. It was implemented to provide us with a programmatic framework of managing our IT organization. It allows us to manage based on quality and consistency, based upon services that describe what we deliver. So very closely aligned to the idea of being a service provider. But when people have thought about it, they've thought about it this way. They've thought about it just in terms of this top item, incident management, ticketing. They thought of ITIL in terms of just this kind of idea of break, fix, support. And they hadn't always thought about it in terms of how do I become a service provider. So when ITIL's initial versions were available, they had a version called V2, which is where you had these different service management functions of incident, service request, problem management, change release, configuration, and service level management. And they were siloed off in a way and weren't necessarily addressed holistically around the concept of delivering a service to the business. So at that time, Microsoft even produced something called Microsoft Operations Framework, which extended that to create a cyclical nature of how ITIL is defined. A lot of businesses, probably most of your businesses, especially in the enterprise, have gone and adopted a lot of these practices, or at least they've tried to adopt these practices. So what happened with ITIL is a V3 was released of ITIL several years ago. And it came about with something called a service lifecycle. The idea of a service lifecycle is to say that anytime I want to deliver something to the business, whether it's a customer ordering service, or it's a university website, or an internal application, that service has a lifecycle associated with it. I would have decided to do it, which is what I'm doing in this component of strategy. I would have designed it, so I would have said, this customer ordering service that I want to deliver to my business has to look like this. This is how I'm going to design that customer ordering service. Once you've designed it and built it, it then transitions into production, which means that you have a change record. A lot of people that are on this call probably have experience with the idea of change requests and release management. This idea of I have a change advisory board that meets every week. And when that change occurs, we meet in a room and we go through the idea of a change on the board. And it's in an enterprise that can be a very, very tedious process. Although it provides a lot of availability and can improve the way in which we deliver, it also tends to slow down the way in which we execute. It moves into operations, which is where we have incident management, service request management, and event management, where things are actually in production. Stuff's breaking, stuff is going into production, and I need to know what's happening within my business. Operations management allows me to be able to do that. So those incident and service requests live within that part of lifecycle. And then they move into continuous improvement, where I'm improving the idea of the service over time. So lately, you've heard about this concept of DevOps. DevOps has been something that has been kind of brewing for a while, and it's really been particularly popular within the service provider market, where they're running a particular application, and they have the opportunity to be able to, and actually the business need to be able to enhance that application often, especially web-scale applications. But what is DevOps? DevOps is not just a, it's not a tool, right? It's not just something you go in and, it's not something you go and install, right? You hear a lot of people using tools in the concept of DevOps, but what really is it? DevOps is a cultural evolution within an organization that is focused on people, process, and the right tools to make your application lifecycle faster and more predictable. Its job is to accelerate the process of bringing value to the organization, but do it in a controlled way. A lot of us have lived in organizations that maybe grew up a little bit too fast and didn't have the controls in place to be able to actually deliver quickly in a sustainable way, in a way that delivers quality along with the rapid release cycle. So DevOps takes the combination of people, process, and the right tools and enables us to do that faster. And this can merge right into the ITIL concepts that we're executing in our enterprise today. So this is our traditional kind of dev and ops relationship, okay? So on the left-hand side, I've got these developers. They work on something, and they produce a bit of code, or this may be, if you don't necessarily have developers in your organization, you may have external vendors that are producing builds for you that you install. So don't necessarily assume that this DevOps concept has to be limited to the idea that you're building everything yourself. So we have these developers on this left-hand side. Then we have this sort of wall that exists. Then we have the operations people. And what happens is they throw this thing over the wall, and then what happens? It blows up, right? The idea being that oftentimes they release something that has not necessarily been tested, or it's been tested, but not in a consistent way with the way production executes. And I've been on projects where they've released the software, but then once it's been released, I found out that that project team doesn't even exist anymore. They're not even in existence. They're gone on to some other project and they can't help me. So now I'm in a position where not only do I not have a partner in supporting this, but that team doesn't even exist. So let's walk through just a little bit of a classic org chart in terms of how this relates. We really have kind of three principal actors within our IT organizations. We have the business, we have development, and we have operations. Business is asking for something, development's building it, and operations is operating it. Well, how does that change with DevOps? What DevOps does is it says, these don't necessarily have to be separate silos. These can interact with each other. And DevOps really occurs right there, right in the middle of our process is where DevOps lives. Because DevOps is about enabling each of these parties to be more effective. It's saying there don't need to be walls that exist within our organization. We have the opportunity to be able to take team members and integrate them into different teams to allow for us to be able to be more effective. So when you look at DevOps, you look at it within the context of Microsoft's ALM framework. Microsoft's Application Lifecycle Framework is intended to provide us with a consistent cycle that we go through. That means plan, developing, releasing, and operating. And interior to these, production and interior to development, we have these reoccurring testing patterns that are occurring, and then we have active collaboration between our teams. Now, I'll give you practical steps. It sometimes sounds a little bit out there in terms of how do I actually go about doing this, right? This sounds good, but how do I actually go about doing it? We're going to walk through some practical ways that happens. How does this relate into the ITIL framework? So what happens if I take the enterprise, where I've got these rigorous change controls, I've got these rigorous processes, and I've got this all these political sort of scenarios where I've got manager X and manager Y, and they don't talk to each other, and the teams always point fingers. How do I get past that? DevOps is not a magic bullet, but it's a transformational engine that allows ITIL to execute how it's supposed to and allows the business to work better. If they're meshed well, ITIL and DevOps will maintain the strengths of both and increase the speed and efficiency by which you execute on IT. And it'll enable you to be a service provider that executes quickly. If they're not meshed properly, DevOps will just create chaos. Because if you don't implement it properly, what'll happen is ITIL will super slow it down, because ITIL can sometimes implement these blocks that sit between the developers and deployment that are manual blocks. Or if it's not, if DevOps just simply succeeds in removing walls without implementing protection, it succeeds in destroying active systems and creating availability problems. So meshing ITIL and DevOps is something that you need to do appropriately. And then when you mesh it appropriately, you find out that this is the complete picture in the beginning. This is exactly what we were trying to do in the first place. So when you look at the actual completed ALM framework, you see that the different components of the service lifecycle actually sit within that ALM framework. Within plan, you have service strategy and design. Within develop and test, you have service design. Within release, you have service transition. Within operate, you have operations. So you have this relationship between these different functions. So, for example, in the planning phase, where we're going about deciding what we want to build and how we're going to build it, you go from a base, from what a lot of businesses do, which is like a waterfall-driven, very slow-moving service development lifecycle, and you move that to an agile delivery lifecycle, which improves the time to value, reduces cost, and provides us with greater long-term value over a period of time. When you're looking at develop and test, you're better integrating the operational teams with the development teams, and you're using concepts like infrastructure as code, configuration as code, and you're reducing what's necessary for it to be successful, and you're building automated test frameworks that allow for you to be able to release faster. So when you're going through this release cycle here, one of the secret components of DevOps, maybe not so secret components of DevOps, is the idea of automated release management, the idea of speeding up the release pipeline, but protecting it by ensuring that you have testing, ensuring that you have validation, ensuring that it creates an automated change within your change management system as it moves from dev to production. So you're keeping a lot of the same concepts, but you're implementing these enhancements to how that process works to speed it up and to make it more efficient. It's the same with operate and learn. Oftentimes in the support lifecycle, for it to get back over to planning is this really tedious process. There's no real relationship between the bugs that exist over here and the issues that you're running into over here. How do I create that relationship between what I'm running into in production, running into development? I worked with a company very recently that had that situation. They had Visual Studio Online, and then they had a ticket management system that's doing incident management. And the question we said is, hey, you guys aren't talking to each other at all. How do we provide you with this relationship? So when someone calls up the service desk, they see that you have an active bug in your backlog that you're working on. And then you can communicate between those two teams and provide faster service and be able to prioritize which of those bugs is actually impacting our customers the most. So creating this cyclical aspect of IT allows us to be able to improve the way in which we serve our customers. All right, so how does technology fit into this? Then we'll start demoing through some stuff. Technology fits in a sense of being a complete life cycle. So we're going to start with the idea of having developers who are working on something. We start with the idea of we have a product like Visual Studio Online that contains our work backlog, that contains our efforts that are going on within IT to be able to serve our customers. And this isn't just a developer. We've used this with SharePoint projects, with System Center projects, with CRM projects. Visual Studio Online has the opportunity to be able to maintain backlogs for any system that you're developing over a period of time. That's not just a box product that you go and install, where you're building out a backlog and you're managing that backlog over a period of time. And your code repository might be like Team Foundation, your source control, it might be Git. Either way, it doesn't matter. We're still using the opportunity here. Now, one of the things you can think about is that you may be using some other components of this story. I'm going to be walking through mostly Microsoft tools, but if you're using some other components of the story, that's totally fine. DevOps and ITIL is the idea of improving the process by which you execute and partnering that with technology to be able to accelerate the process. So we're taking Visual Studio Online and then we're using release management to be able to go and execute out to Azure or out to an on-prem service using Visual Studio Release Management. I'm going to show the new version of that, and also using something like Azure Automation. We bring that into one of our hosted platforms, whether it's on-prem or Azure, and then we provide support for that platform through things like Visual Studio Application Insights. We provide it through Operations Management Suite, the new OMS that Microsoft announced at Ignite, as well as System Center Operations Manager. And then the release management, we've automated release management. Instead of having to have someone who physically sits there and walks through a document to actually install the software, think about how much time goes into writing the document, testing the document, validating a guy can walk through the document, and then all the error that happens in the process of following that document. The idea of DevOps, the idea of ITIL combined with DevOps is to accelerate that. Remove the human element where there's a failure opportunity and let the human work on something much more valuable for the business. Then we move into the support parameters. We can move into an internal IT support tool like Service Manager, or we can move into a frontline support tool like CRM and its relationship to other backend products. So I'll be demoing through some of those components today as well. All right, so before we demo, Honor, we had a recall. Do you have any questions out there?
Yes, actually, one came in from Steve where the question was in security senses for PCIe 3 and looking at it also from a DevOps standpoint. When doing things in production, you know, how do you circumvent some of the challenges that you have from a compliancy standpoint? And I think you hit it on the nail when you said, you know, looking at it from a change in release cycle perspective. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you can lessen some of the security concerns and patch that gap?
Oh, that's a great question. You're absolutely right that oftentimes businesses need to have different teams that allow for releases within different environments. The way in which we've controlled that in other companies is we've automated the release process, but we've put controls in place that require that other team to go through and actually complete an approval before it gets released to production. And actually that team's responsible also for going through and validating it after it went to QA, and then it gets sent over to production in themselves. So they're not actually installing it themselves, maybe even using a different account to actually execute the continuous deployment. But what you're doing instead is you have the other team actually go and approve it. All right.
So one more question came in, Nate, which was, does Azure Stack imply that we can do this on Azure Pack on-site?
Azure Stack does imply that. So the things that I'm going to be showing today are going to be in public Azure, but the on-premise Azure Pack or Azure Stack facilitates you doing all of these same things within your on-premise environment as well, using the Azure Resource Manager. All right. So we're going to get through a lot of content and demos in a very short period of time. So hold on to your seats. So where am I going to start? I'm going to start in Power BI. And in Power BI, I'm going to show you a little bit about what it means. We're going to start with the idea of the service. So we're going to start with this idea and kind of just for concepts here. I'm going to bring up the service lifecycle up here. Okay. So think about this service lifecycle. We're starting right here at service strategy, right? So I'm an executive. I'm looking at my Power BI dashboard, and what I see in front of me is different things that I'm delivering to the business. I see my staff allocation costs, my hosting costs, my monthly service costs, my monthly software costs, and project investments. I see the relationship between those and the different services that I deliver to the business. So what executive wouldn't love to have that kind of data where he says, how much am I spending each year on each thing I deliver to my customers? And is that thing even valuable to my customers? That's the kind of data that you can get out to help you make decisions about what's valuable to business or not. So rather than this being one big black box that money just goes into and there's a big dollar amount on, we create transparency. So we say CRM services is costing about $200,000 a year between project investments and service costs and hosting costs and staff allocation. Network connectivity is costing us about $250,000, whereas customer ordering is costing us under $100,000. But our project investments are really low. Why is that? Why are we investing here versus here? So it starts you to be able to have those conversations about where you're really investing within your business. And the way that people have traditionally gotten that is by going out and buying software as a service products. They've got a spot where they know, okay, I'm buying this for buying CRM online. It costs me this a month. I understand how much that costs me. But it still doesn't, even when you buy that SaaS product, it doesn't provide you information about what does it actually cost me to support that internally? Where am I investing in it? How am I improving the business? So Power BI provides us with the ability to be able to present that data. It also allows us to present things like work items associated with that data or people that have worked on that data over a period of time. And when I dive into this, it allows me to be able to say, okay, for customer ordering services, or collaboration services, what does my support look like? How am I doing in terms of monthly incidents, my emergency changes, the extent to which I've breached on that particular incident? And this data can come from a lot of different spots. It can come from your service management system, it can come from your project management system, it can come from a lot of different places. So the next spot I'm gonna go is gonna be like not even technology at all in a way, right? It's gonna be the idea of where do we actually start this conversation? So let's say I've looked at this dashboard. I'm saying now I'm an executive. I like to say, what should I be delivering to my businesses? So I've got all those services out here in a SharePoint list, not really even a significant technology solution. This could essentially be an Excel spreadsheet if you really wanted it to. Start with this. Start with the idea of articulating all the things you deliver to the business and whether or not they're valuable or not, and whether or not they produce business revenue for the company. And how is that helping you? Allows you to start thinking like a business person and then tying that in technology. So the one we're going to take all the way through our service lifecycle is Concurrency University. Concurrency University is a service. So what our company does is we have a university program we offer internally and externally for training up of new team members of our own staff, as well as helping other companies to be able to train up their own operational team members. So we have a Concurrency University website that allows us to support that. And we have a revenue target associated with it, as well as hours saved, capital costs, service costs, project hours, and support hours, all tied to this service of Concurrency University. That's one that we're going to track through all of our various technology solutions today. You might have someone who asks for something completely stupid, like fizzy lifting drinks, right? So Kirk Poser here has asked for fizzy lifting drinks. Our business isn't going to invest in that, right? And we might find that we're spending all sorts of time supporting fizzy lifting drinks when it's not supporting or helping our business at all. So the idea of providing this at a service level gives you the opportunity to be able to say, how do I really support my business, and am I doing it well? If I open up Concurrency University, I have a relationship between that and my Visual Studio Online account. So I automate the creation of a Visual Studio Online project called Cincy University that contains the product backlog and the work items and my burn downs associated with my product backlog within the context of my work patterns and my code. So this could be an application we're building. It could be a SharePoint site. So let's say you're building an internal website for your business. Backlog could go right here. Even if there's not necessarily code, you can still manage the backlog within Visual Studio Online. And what you'll find is that as they start maturing the build of that SharePoint environment, there probably will be code. And what happens if you don't have a repository is it goes wherever that developer built it, and it doesn't go anywhere good. So while it gives us this opportunity to be able to create the spot where our work pattern actually occurs. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into the work area of Visual Studio Online, and this is going to represent the sprints that I'm executing against Concurrency University. So what you can see here is that I've got sprint 1, 2, 3, and 4. And you can see in here that I have different backlog items that are associated with that sprint. And interior to here, I have these tasks that are associated with it as well. And I can open one of these up and get specific information about what exactly I'm doing, who it's assigned to, what state it's in, what the reason, whether it's started or not, and then the work associated with it. And then what happens is, this aligns to active capacity that we have. So you can see I have 4 different team members, all of which have capacity per day to be able to work on this particular backlog. And I can assign them activities, and then I can also move them. So if you're used to the idea of boards, you can move these from one environment, from one task status to another, to do, in progress, to done. Very similar to how you would draw this up on the board. You can, or put the sticky notes up on the board. You can do this right within Visual Studio Online. You can even use this with a touchscreen. So if you're using a touchscreen environment, I'm just active. You can't see me touch my screen right now, but that's actually what I'm doing. So you can touch your screen and move those around on the board. So if you have one of those Surface Hubs, or you have a big perceptive pixel device, and you put that up on the wall, you can actually use the touch experience to move these items around, similarly to how you would do it if you were using sticky notes. I can also see how I'm doing on my burn down. So am I going to make it? Ideally, what you should see is that the active tasks are following this line, because this is the amount of time I have left within my sprint, and these are the tasks that I have available within that sprint. So it allows me to be able to manage those active tasks to that end of my sprint, which is 5:22, and the start of my sprint. So hopefully, it looks like I'm pretty close to being able to get there. It's something that I can manage to as I change around the actual work patterns. And then if I find that I don't have enough capacity, I can move those around within my backlog. And I can say, now maybe this one deserves to be in a different sprint. So I can take those and move them to different spots and give myself the ability to be able to change the way my work pattern occurs. This is different than a traditional waterfall model. The cool thing about this is that as things enter into the backlog, I can then select to work on those, and then they can become I can set appropriate expectations with my customer. I can say, here's the things that I'm working on for the next 2 weeks. And your customer can then prioritize the activities that you're performing. So your project lifecycle transforms drastically. Now, DevOps isn't just about running agile, right? It's much broader than that. But the opportunity to be able to manage a sprint, manage the work backlog, and then set expectations to your customers is an easy win that provides you with the opportunity to be able to execute better. Oftentimes, before we started using VSO, we started just using Excel spreadsheets to be able to manage that. But what we found is that, obviously, VSO has so much more capability than that. So this relates directly into some other technologies that you should be aware of. So when I create one of these particular items, what I can do is I can actually trigger other requests. So in VSO, there's an ability to be able to configure what's called service hooks. And service hooks allow me to call other services outside of the system. So for example, I can create a subscription to the webhooks that exist within Azure Automation. So Azure Automation allows me to be able to take the webhooks, decide when that will actually execute, build completed versus code checked in and so on, and then point that to the URL of the webhook that automates. So in my particular example, what I want to do is I want to take anytime a new item gets created, I want to email my team members about that item creation. So I'm taking that trigger, I'm selecting that the build has been completed, and I'm going to kick off an action. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into my Azure environment. So in my Azure environment, I'm going to take the webhook from Azure Automation. Azure Automation is Microsoft's Azure-based automation platform that allows me to execute visual-based PowerShell scripts against any target I want. So I'm going to browse out and go to my VSO connectors Azure Automation space. Select my runbook, and here's my runbook right here, VSO sent email. Then I can select my webhook. Here it is. And this webhook can be enabled or disabled based upon what it is that I actually want to be doing. Now what I can also do is I can access the actual properties of that webhook, actually see its subscription ID, understand its actual runbook settings, and I can grab its actual, so the jobs that it's run over a period of time. And I can also select the actual webhook itself. And when I go to create that webhook, what happens is I get a URL. And this URL gets copied into right here. So then, based upon that URL, it allows me to securely execute an email that I wrote in Azure Automation. Let's test that. Perfect. Okay, let's close that out. And this is essentially, within here, a set of PowerShell that goes and executes that email. So it allows for me to be able to develop the email, see what I see, ID, title, area, path, type. This is pulling information from Visual Studio. It's actually connecting to Visual Studio to pull that data back, and then it's sending it back into, sending out the email itself. And then, because I don't have my email open, I took a screenshot. Basically creates and sends this email out to me as a consumer. Now, that's a really simple example. You may not even long-term need to do that to create an email. But the idea is that any action I do within Visual Studio, whether it's creating a work item, or it's deploying a build, or it's enabling some kind of component, allows me to be able to make a decision, automate it, and then because I can talk to webhooks in Azure Automation, the possibilities are endless in terms of my opportunities. All right, let's pause here just for a second to see if there's any questions. Anna, are there any questions?
Yes. There's a question around the framework side of the house. And one of the questions was, you know, why would you or would you not have a DevOps team? And, you know, what do you actually need to make this work?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, a lot of organizations, when they're implementing DevOps, they think that sometimes what this means is I'm going to create a team that just does this. And I'm going to just kind of keep my current people in place, and then I'm going to build a team that's just doing DevOps. And what I found is that that's really an anti-pattern. That's really not a pattern that allows for us to be able to work better as a team. It causes us to be able, having that separate team just creates more confusion within the enterprise environment. So instead of creating a separate DevOps team, the idea of DevOps is really to say, these circles start to overlap. So rather than having circles that are completely separate from each other, they overlap each other, and people from each team sit in with each other. So this means that your developer starts to sit in with the operations team. It means the business sits in this review of the backlog. These different people start to sit in on these different parts of the project more, become more integrated, and have better expectations set. Any other questions, Honor?
The next one was, how do I actually convince my leadership team in making this change, or how do I make this go forward with the leadership side of the house?
Oh, that's fun. That's a great question. Your leadership team is a critical part of making this successful. There's two ways to implement this, organically and through top-down leadership. When you have both of those, you're going to be much more successful than if you only have one. If you only have top-down leadership, but the teams aren't bought in, you're not going to get very far. If your teams are bought in, but you don't have top-down leadership, meaning that they may not actually be supporting you or not supporting you, they may not be really actively making this a priority, meaning that you don't have time to work on these kind of exercises. So it is very important to be able to get the leadership involved. And the way you do it is you simply talk to them about the idea of how the business is asking them to be able to support them. How is the business asking them to be able to provide them value? It's what IT leaders are finding is that this is something that they're being asked to do. So if you go to your leader and you say, you know what, I think we need to be able to improve the way we execute and make ourselves more efficient. I think we need to be able to present our value out to the business differently. You start managing up to your leader, you're going to find that this is either a business that you're going to want to work for long term, and you're going to see that they're going to really start to transform, or you're going to find that that IT department is going to continue to shrink over time because they're not effective for the business. Any other questions, Anna?
Yeah, there was one around technology for TFS versus VSO. So what's the primary benefit of using VSO, which is Visual Studio Online, versus just TFS on-prem?
Yeah, the principal benefit of VSO, I know a lot of this exists in TFS right now, is because VSO is really getting a much more rapid release cadence than on-premises. So on-premises continuing to get releases, obviously the new release is coming very soon, but as you install on-premise products, you've got to update them, you've got to maintain them. VSO is continually being updated by the team, so it provides you with a much greater opportunity to be able to use new features versus waiting every several years to actually be able to be doing the deployment. All right, so let's move into our next section. So I'm going to open up my Visual Studio environment, and what I'm going to see on the right-hand side is that I, as a developer, now have active work items that I'm assigned. Here's the things that I've been asked to do within my environment. And what I have is this add to search the coursework. So I'm going to actually move this to in-progress work, and this is something I'm going to work on. And I'm going to make an edit to my code here. And then what I can do is I can say, okay, that looks good. I'd like to check in that particular work. So we go. All right, now that's been successfully checked in. That's something that I've made a modification to. And the cool thing is that that modification is now tied to the change that I just made. So if I come out here and I go to code, change sets, there's my change. Just made it at 11:44. I select that, and it's going to show me exactly what that change is. So imagine giving your operations teams access to see what gets modified exactly within your releases. Let's say you're running this Concurrency University website, and my support team says, you know, I saw something really odd happen within the system. Did something change? You can go out here and see exactly what changed within the system and understand how that modification has occurred and where it occurred. Another thing we can do is we can actually define, and this is something that was reviewed in the last session, is there's a new ability within Visual Studio and its relationship to Azure to define what are called Azure Resource Management configurations in a JSON consistent format that allows us to actually define the release and deployment configuration that gets built in Azure. So my application, rather than being something that I go out and manually define, my code actually defines the infrastructure and the configuration of that infrastructure that exists outside of my Azure environment. So my developers can say, this is exactly what I need. Go and implement this. And that's compliant against Azure Stack on-premise, as well as Azure in the cloud. And this gets written within this context of this website SQL database JSON, right? So it allows me to be able to say, here's how I actually define those components of my environment, and they get built out. So when I deploy it, let's go over to here. When I deploy it, it gives me this Azure resource group. I'm bringing up the Concurrency University site. And my resource group. Cool. All right. So what I have here is my Concurrency University site that contains Concurrency University's web app, and contains the application insights configuration for Cincy University and the SQL database for Cincy University, all contained within the configuration that's then deployed as a component of my application. So it allows me to be able to properly support it because I then have the actual topology that it follows over time. And what I'm using here is I'm then even also configuring events. So tied to this, after it gets deployed, I'm configuring alert rules that then define what happens when something occurs. So for example, when my CPU is over 90%, what occurs here? Do I want to get an email? Do I want it to change the resources? How do I want to support my system over a period of time? So it allows me to be able to react to technical scenarios within the context of my environment. It also allows me to track the billing of that particular resource group. Rather than having to do it at the big subscription level, it allows me to be able to track it. It also allows me to be able to configure user permissions associated with it, as well as properties associated with it. And I can do things like configuring application insights associated with that particular instance. So application insights allows me to see who's actually hitting my site over a period of time, and are they hitting it on a regular basis? So if I go into application insights, it'll indicate, what does my traffic actually look like? Let's data back. Got an overall timeline, failures. Okay, so I can see when I'm actually hitting this. And the way that that got integrated is right inside my code, there's a component for Azure Application Insights. All you got to do is integrate it within VSO, and it will automatically add that to your process within Application Insights. Okay, now another thing that you should be aware of is that I can do what's called continuous deployment. Let's go back to here. This is sounds. Associated with my website. What continuous deployment allows me to do is allows me to say, anytime I check something in, deploy it to my website. It allows me to have what's called a continuous deployment pattern that allows me to be able to say, anytime I've built a particular revision, deploy that out, but deploy it to certain deployment slots. So these slots align with a test environment that I'm then validating against. Now, this will then allows me to swap between two different environments, between my dev and between my testing environment and my prod environment, as I do a continuous deployment of every build that happens. Now, you can put checks and balances in that place. So as you, before it actually goes there, you can say, I need to do a code review, I need to check it in, et cetera. Now, let's say that you want to have additional controls. What you can do is you can use the upcoming Visual Studio Release Management. Let's see here. Visual Studio Release Management, which is part of the new build of Visual Studio Online, to be able to do dev, QA, and prod promotions between your different environments. And that provides me with integrations as well as additional capabilities in terms of my release pipeline, which we'll not initially go into right now. Okay. So now let's kind of complete this circle. What happens when this is deployed and I want to be able to provide support to it? Am I on the operations side? Well, if I'm an operations person, I might be using the Microsoft Operations Management Suite, which was released at Ignite. And this contains alerts associated with the application that I now have in production. So I can then say, I'm monitoring this application. Tell me if this application has been running successfully, or indicate whether or not I have logs coming from the application that I need to be supporting and point me out to those logs. Provide me with the information I need to be able to support it in conjunction with all my other applications within my environment. And both you and the developers have access to the same data. So you're sharing the data. You have access to this data, you have access to the operational insights information, and you have access to the change history. So in addition to logging the change within your change management system, you're also logging those changes within DSO and you know exactly what occurred. So your CAD meetings can be much faster because you don't have to go through each one every time. Finally, the operations team might get a case. So what I have in front of you here is Microsoft Dynamics CRM. So let's say that I'm a person on the front line and I want to be able to take a case that's occurring, that's coming in from a end user of my application. So what I can do is say, all right, new case. All right. And the case title, we'll call it issue with department sub site. Can't get to my department site. And for a subject, this is a malfunction. It's not working properly. My customers, this is a concurrency person, so I'm supporting them. And my contact is Luke Skywalker. And he's using Concurrency University, which is my service that I'm logging within the context of my Dynamics environment. And I'm going to add a phone call because he called on the phone. Luke. And he said, of course, strong, but can't access the subsite. I'm going to save that. And I'm going to go to the next stage. And during researching, I might find that I need to assign this to somebody else. And let's say that instead of having this simply go to another tier and then have to wait to get to developers, what if my developers were actually participating as part of this team? What if they're participating as part of this team and they could diagnose it right on the fly? And as they diagnose it, they say, yup, that's absolutely a bug. We found a bug within the system. So what happens is, as I go to a resolution state, because in ITIL, resolution is the idea that now we found this, maybe we have a workaround, but it's actually a bug. I'm going to say bug identified. I'm going to resolve that. And then what I'm doing to bring that full circle is I actually have an Azure automation. Let's go out here. So connectors, runbooks. An Azure automation that's bringing that content and saying, okay, I found a bug. Let's take that content and bring it right back into my backlog. All right, there's my item. So I can take this and I can say, okay, this is actually pretty important. I'm going to now add this to the current sprint that we're working on. And we're going to now try to knock that out before the deadline. Now, that's something that we actually have to go about and do. And somebody has to classify it and say it has, you know, 16 hours to be able to fix that particular site. What we've done is we've taken that full circle within the environment. All right. Anna, we're going to take some questions right at the end. I'm going to try to get to the end of some of these next steps, and then we'll take some questions.
Yep.
All right. So let's go back and say, hey, how can I take some of these concepts and really implement them practically? Here are some things that you can do in the first 3 months to be able to see this value within your business. First, deploy your ideation and service framework, meaning create a basic SharePoint site and list out all the services that you do. And then start to articulate against them the value that you bring to the business. and where that value, where the work that you're doing is misaligned with what the business is asking you to do. Optimize the culture to provide collaboration, meaning integrate the different teams and then take those teams and allow them to work as overlapping circles. Say, take your developer and have them sit with the support team every week and cycle those developers through to the support team. What will happen is your developers will get a better appreciation of how support works, and they'll be better at identifying and managing bugs. Also, take your operations people and integrate them in the development team. Take your business people and integrate them in the backlog conversation. Next time, is start a backlog and grooming process. I will tell you, just have from being a consultant and knowing about customer expectation setting, that starting a backlog and grooming process is one of the first things I do. Because if I don't have a backlog and grooming process, it's very difficult for me to set expectations with my customer. Because I don't know when I'm going to be able to get something done. And as new things they want keep pouring in, if I haven't defined that backlog, it's very difficult for me to say, here's your item, I heard you, I understand that this is something you want. Is this more important than the other 10 things that I have on the backlog right now? So rather than becoming this kind of amorphous thing they don't have access to seeing, they now see exactly how much capacity you have and that you're managing to that capacity and that they can help you decide what to do first and second. Next. Use PowerShell DSC to normalize your data center state. I have this actually as a demo. I didn't show it yet, but you can use PowerShell DSC to be able to declaratively configure your servers within your environment. If you're not using ARM as part of your deployment process and you're doing more, you have more traditional servers and so on, you can still normalize the server configurations within the environment using PowerShell DSC. Lots of good content out there on PowerShell DSC right now. Rod Plank did a good job on walking through that. Automate release management for dev and prod. Normalize incident management for teams. So integrate them and create relationships between incidents and the backlogs, like I did with the CRM connector. And finally, take that and provide business intelligence information for analysis. Awesome. Well, thank you very much. It has been such a pleasure to talk to you today. Also, thank you very much to Honor for him being the moderator. I know we didn't get to all the questions, so if you do have questions, please either email me or put it out on Twitter or access our blog, and we'd be more than happy to start to answer those questions. So thank you very, very much, and I appreciate your time.
Thanks, everyone.